White Rocket Entertainment.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by the book tour for Ken Ringer's epic book, Lorendo. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, it's that time once again. The first 11 games of the season are behind us, and it all comes down to a trip to Tuscaloosa. This has been a very weird series over the years in terms of where it's been played and why and how, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But I guess before we start talking about the Iron Bowl, we should give a few minutes looking back to what transpired on Saturday when Auburn got a shutout, among other things.
It was a very nice senior day, other than the fact I'm sure the home fans didn't appreciate it being a night game, but
and cold.
It was great senior day. We got the shutout, and Jeremy got to play and had a really good game, so that was fun.
Jeremy did. Jeremy got to. That was the one thing I was the most interested in, I have to admit, going in, was seeing if Jeremy was going to start and how much he was going to play, since it really was his last opportunity to play at home. I was thinking of it this way. If the starter is hurt and you are a fifth-year senior and you haven't been, you know, everything you were cracked up to be, but you haven't been the worst quarterback of all time, honestly. He hasn't. And you can't start against Alabama A&M at home on senior day. What does that say? So I just didn't see any reason how he wouldn't. Because, I mean, he'd have to, like, come out and throw up all over himself, fumble the ball every snap, and run the wrong way for a safety, thinking he was scoring a touchdown to not deserve to... to play in that scenario.
But I think a lot of people went with your thought from weeks ago, which is if John Franklin is the backup,
then
the starter is out, then the backup starts.
Well, any other situation, yes. Any other scenario, yes. But in this particular one, where one guy's been there 5 years, the other's been there 5 months, you know?
It was the opponent and the fact that it was senior day combined to make it a thing where we were going to win regardless of who played quarterback, so let Jeremy have his day in the sun. He deserved it.
Absolutely. He goes 14 for 19 for 7.7 average, 147 yards, one touchdown, and no interception. I'm glad he had no interceptions on his last game in Jordan-Hare. And, you know, if you ask the average Auburn fan that doesn't keep up with such things and just hears the talk, if you said, in his career, what's Jeremy Johnson's touchdown to interceptions, they'd probably say something like 4 touchdowns, 37 interceptions, right? But it's actually more like 20-something touchdowns and like 9 interceptions. Or it's not great, but it's not horrible. It's not horrible. He had all of his interception trouble really – in the first 2 or 3 games of 2015. Other than that, you know, because he didn't throw a lot of interceptions when he came back and played after Sean got hurt last year. And I guess he's only thrown one this year. So all of that horrible, horrible problem that he had where he was throwing to the wrong player and all that. I mean, I know that he, you know, people looked at his performance this week and they said, well, you know, he's still looking at receivers and he's still doing this, that, and the other. He's still throwing in a double coverage. And that's all well and good, but But he really only had really bad trouble with interceptions happening that two or three game stretch to begin 2015. And I noted on Twitter that Jeremy Johnson, had he been a 1AA, or as they say now, as the kids say today, FCS, if he had been an FCS quarterback, I think he would have thrown for 8 billion yards for some AA team. What do you think?
I think that's accurate. I think that's fair. So, yeah.
Yep.
And I was genuinely happy for him. It's a nice story.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely.
At the other end of the spectrum, I wasn't delighted with us playing Kerryon Johnson so much.
Yeah, you had to wonder why they didn't just let Cam Martin just play the whole game, really.
I wondered that. Like, when he played, it's obvious he can play. Mm. I mean, I'm not saying he's ready to run wild on the SEC, but Cam Martin is not a bad player. And Kerryon is not 100% yet, so I don't know.
Well, we were missing quite a few players.
Oh yeah, a lot of guys set out.
And who do you think was most consequential in terms of? Well, obviously Petway, they wanted to hold him out because he's still not able to, go. And even if he was coming back, you don't want to send him out there against Alabama A&M and have him get something worse. And I have a feeling we have at least one question asking about him playing on Saturday, so I'm not going to go there quite yet. I don't want to step on that, but there's no way you played him, right? There just was no way.
No. Carlton Davis sat out. He was banged up. And from the Georgia games, he sat out. That was somebody that, I think we probably missed a little bit. Outside of Petway, so.
Yeah.
Chandler Cox, he makes a big difference when he's in the game.
I'm just noticing, by the way, that there are no rushing stats listed on the SECSports.com box score for Jonathan Rudy Ford. I know he carried the ball multiple times.
But he didn't. It was that stupid West Virginia play that's actually a pass.
It was a okay. Yeah, he had two catches for 16 yards.
It's a forward lateral when he runs across and the quarterback flips it to him.
And one of them blew up. It was an incomplete pass. Mm-hmm. That was actually kind of funny that after how horrible that play went and he ended up losing like 20 yards or whatever and ended up being an incomplete pass and coming back. I thought that was pretty funny. But, we were noting that Tyler Queen was in his helmet and we were like, why is he doing that? And you suggested that perhaps he was afraid they were going to start throwing things on the field or something. He put his helmet on. Like Bear Bryant at that Georgia Tech game when they start throwing liquor bottles at Bear Bryant, so Bear actually put an Alabama helmet on to leave the field at Grant Field. And by the way, since I mentioned that, do you know what Bear's quote was when they asked him later about at one point a liquor bottle bonked off his helmet, and he reached down and picked it up. And after the game, some reporter asked him, Coach, what'd you think about the Georgia Tech fans throwing liquor bottles at you? You know what his quote was?
No.
He said he looked at that bottle. He said, I was disappointed. I thought that Tech fan drank a better kind of liquor than that. That man knew his liquor. Let me just tell you. He knew his alcoholic beverages. He was a connoisseur. So he knows the kind that tastes best bouncing off your helmet and into your lap.
But you were talking about Tyler Queen, and it's funny because he did go in the game. Later in the game.
That's what I was getting at when I got sidetracked by my Bear Bryant story was, he actually did play. Now, we knew he was not going to throw a pass. That just was not going to happen.
Why not?
His arm. he has a bionic arm, then the batteries are not charged yet.
If you're in the game, take a shot. I guess at that point they were being merciful. That's why I didn't throw it. But
he's medically not allowed to throw a football. He has a surgically mechanically reconstructed arm that runs on AA batteries now.
But will he be allowed to throw the ball next year?
Next year, I'm thinking, but he just had surgery. So remember they said he was on a pitch count, and then they actually said that was not even good for him, and they took him entirely out of it. So
I want to say one other thing about that, though, because I tweeted about Tower Queen being in the game, made some kind of joke about Tower Queen for Heisman and that kind of stuff. But and he favorited that tweet after the game. And there's an important lesson here for all of us in that players like search social media after the game for references to them. And so if you say something about an Auburn player, they're probably going to see it, you know, unless they're like Carl Lawson or Kerryon or something. And there's a million people saying something about them. But I think there's a lesson there for all of us in that to think about what you say about some young men in that kind of situation.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I'm just looking at the rushing stats. I do think it's funny that only one player had any passing stats, and that's Jeremy. But yet we had three quarterbacks record rushing stats. Franklin, Jeremy, and Tyler Queen all had rushing stats. And John Franklin's numbers, he only attempted 4 carries, but he averaged 20.3 yards per carry for 81 yards and a touchdown. And what was funny, his touchdown wasn't his long run. He had that long 45-yard run where he was tackled on like the 10 or something. And I'm sitting there thinking, how did somebody catch up with him? They must have been like the deep safety or something. It was standing back there waiting on him. I mean, I guess
I think the guy had the ankle on him. So.
I guess that's what you do is if you're Alabama A&M and John Franklin comes in at quarterback, you take your free safety and you put him 40 yards back because otherwise you're not going to catch him if he gets past the defense. Just go ahead and put like a kick returner guy back and he can be the one to try to, you know, bring him down. That's not a bad idea. Put him in the back of the end zone like Davis. And he can, like, try to tackle him on the one before he gets in. I like it. What do you think about Cam Martin?
I liked him. I mean, I think he looks really good. I'm excited about his future potential. I think he's explosive, but I think he wasn't afraid to run inside either. And
right, exactly. That's what I was getting at. Yeah. I was under the impression he was a sort of an Ontario McCaleb light. He looks like a young Trey Mason more than Ontario McCaleb to me.
Exactly. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be Trey Mason, but put 20 pounds of muscle on that kid, and I think he's going to be a really, really productive running back for us. So, I mean, I look at him as a very, you know, a definite guy in the rotation next year. And he could still be the speed guy, but he could be the, you know, change of pace guy and kind of the receiver out of the backfield guy too.
Our backfield's going to look considerably different next year, and I'm really drooling at the thought of what we're going to have going in the backfield next year, because we'll have a Cameron Petway that should be 100% healthy then. We'll have Cam Martin with more muscle on him and a year of experience in the off season and bowl practice and everything in spring and fall. We'll have Kerryon back presumably. We'll have what's his name, the
Malik Miller
back healthy, hopefully. The backfield's going to look a lot different next year than it does right now, and it's going to be a hoss. As long as the offensive line can replace, you know, the key players that are gone, our running game should be at least as good as it was at its best this year, like against Arkansas. Imagine if we can take a step or two up from where we were against Arkansas this year.
To me, the exciting part is, you know, if Petway and Malik Miller and those other guys are healthy and Kerryon doesn't have to be the bell cow between the tackles running back, that'll really help him stay healthy and he could be much more explosive.
Yep.
And getting like 15 touches a game and not running between the tackles. I mean, he could be like a real home run hitter kind of a back. And I think that is there.
The only game that he got to really show out before he got hurt was LSU, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he got hurt
right at the beginning of the next game.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, I was like that. He got hurt at Ole Miss, I think.
Yeah, at Mississippi State. I think he got hurt like on the second play against Mississippi State.
That's right.
His best game, maybe not in terms of yards, but just in terms of what he did for the team, his best game, I think, was LSU. because anything we got in the LSU game that led to those field goals was pretty much him. And he was healthy that entire game, and that was before Petway started blowing away.
Mm-hmm. No, that's fair.
Yeah. The defense looked awesome.
I mean, it's again, it's a bad 1AA team, but the a shutout is a shutout, and I mean they were not incompetent on offense or anything. They had a couple of guys like that are potential pro prospects, and the defense played well. They took it seriously. Sometimes you go in that game, you see guys are kind of going through the motions or whatever, but they took it seriously and they respected their opponent, and it was nice. So,
and I'm trying to think. I believe we have a shutout every election year. I'm not sure about 2012, although the defense was not horrible in 2012. We may have shut out some cupcake in 2012 because we know we shut somebody out in 08. We know we shut somebody out in 04. My goodness, that team should have shut out five or six teams. And we know we shut out Alabama in 2000. So you got to go all the way back to 96, and I'm not sure. Yeah, I think we probably shut out Cal State Fullerton or somebody that year.
We did not shut out anybody in 12, so.
Oh, man. Well, we do have a thing about shutting teams out in election years. It's kind of funny. And I got more about that kind of stuff coming up in a little bit in the Factoid of the Week section. Let's see. Holsey got hurt. Darrell Williams got hurt.
Yeah, and apparently they're okay. I mean, I think I think both of them are supposed to be going through practice this week. But they were both scary.
Yeah, they're gonna practice this week. This is all right. They'll be all right. We can get them everybody back out here for Alabama. It's gonna be special. So, anything else about the A&M of Alabama?
No.
Cool band performance at halftime. They do bring the band. And by the way, if people didn't know, you could actually watch halftime. It may still be up. If you go to watch ESPN app or the ESPN app on Apple TV, which is what I have both, if you go into the SEC Network channel tab, if you go into channels and go SEC Network, you could find the entire halftime show for both teams as a separate little program, if you scroll down, which, believe me, John, a lot of our listeners, people out there, want to see the Auburn marching band instead of the Talking Heads. My wife was very disappointed that they don't, she's always complaining, why don't they show the bands? I'm like, well, you kind of have to go to the game to see that. And they had it on, so we actually got to watch it. It was pretty neat. Well, let's look ahead here a little bit to a little team from a town across the state from Auburn. I forget what they're called exactly. The Alabama Elephantitis. I don't know what they are, but anyway, we're playing some in-state rival this week. What are your thoughts going into this as our last game of the regular season?
I have a lot of thoughts. I guess I was at the beginning. I was going to talk about Alabama in a general sense and like what it takes to beat them, and then talk a little bit more specifically about what I think kind of the keys to the game are. I mean, obviously they're really good, they're excellent on defense, they have a strong running game, they have a freshman quarterback, Hurts, who's a very good player. I mean, I would compare him to, like, if Nick Marshall had come to Auburn as a freshman quarterback and played, that's what it would be like. That's the kind of player he is. He's very athletic. He's a good runner, but he's a very inconsistent passer. But he's explosive. He's he's tough to sack, but he also, like, they're careful with him in the passing game. Mm-hmm. I think because they've been number one all year and they haven't lost, I think there's this impression that this team is invincible and invulnerable, and they're not.
Right.
So I want to point out a couple of things that happened during the course of the season that really make me think that. Against some of the better defenses they played this year, they give up a lot of passing yards. So when they played Ole Miss had 421 yards and three touchdowns. So Chad Kelly completed 65% of his passes for 178 passer rating. All right, when they played Arkansas, The Arkansas guy, Austin, had 400 passing yards and 3 touchdowns. Now, he also threw 3 interceptions, and they lost the game. But both of those teams really, really lit up Alabama in the passing game. And on the other side of the ball, you know, we saw the game a couple weeks ago when Alabama played at LSU. You know, they scored 10 points. Right. And they had no points through 3 quarters. And that's against a team, you know, that was in Baton Rouge at night, and LSU was fired up, and their defense played as well as they could possibly play. But they did go scoreless for 3 quarters against that team that Auburn, you know, moved the ball and you know, kicked a bunch of field goals at least against. And in that game, you know, Jalen Hurts was 10 of 19 for 107 yards and 1 interception. So I think that's something to really keep an eye on. Mm-hmm. Their offensive line is good, but it's not the best offense. I mean, I don't think it's the best offensive line we played. I think it's really good. They got a lot of good players. They're good, you know, in when they run the ball. They allow a lot of tackles for loss. And they don't allow a lot of sacks, and that's mainly just because Hurts is such a good runner. Here's the thing about Hurts, okay? There's been all these people this week pushing, like, Hurts for the Heisman and stuff, which I think is great. I hope they have a big push for that this week, because I'm going to tell you something.
Yeah, tell me.
You're laughing.
But I'm not laughing. I'm chomping at the bit.
He's great.
I'm clinging to every morsel, man.
Hurts
because
is
great. I need you to give me facts about this, because
I don't have facts to back this up.
So if it turns out that you're wrong, you can just
blame yourself.
See, that is.
Well, I'm so happy that you had the soundboard back this week. I really.
I knew you'd be happy.
So here's the thing about Hurts as a passer. He's great when no one is near him. Okay?
right.
But again, what I told you, they baby him, all right? 27% of his passes are behind the line of scrimmage. Right. So it's all this kind of screen, sideways, dump off kind of things, you know. It's basically a third of his passes are behind the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. On throws that go more than 10 yards, he completes 43% with 6 touchdowns and 6 interceptions.
Wow. Wow.
I haven't gotten to the good one yet, okay?
Did I say you?
All right. When Jalen Hurts is under pressure, when there are guys in his face, second worst quarterback in the nation.
In the nation?
His quarterback rating is 20.8 when he's under pressure.
Oh, my God!
Good grief.
That's real. That's not me just, like, making up stuff. That is real about their team. So, to me, I think this lays out a very – you know, when I think about this game, there's a very clear path here. And number one is this, like, I have a lot of confidence in the Auburn defense. I think they've showed up all year. Yep. You know, they showed up against Georgia. In every game we played, they've, you know, held the other team down. They don't give up a lot of points. They don't give up a ton of yards. And Alabama is not going to line up and run over us defensively. They're just not. Now, are they going to score some points? Yeah, but 20? Yeah. Like, at the most?
Well,
that's kind of where I'm going with that.
The question is, though, can we cross the 50?
Well, we'll get to the Auburn offense. What I'm telling you is the Auburn defense is going to keep us in the game. It's not going to be a blowout situation.
There's no doubt about that. There's no doubt.
The number one key then in the whole thing is don't give them any extra easy points in turnovers. Just like the Georgia play, Alabama's number one in the country at, like, turning turnovers into points. Right. So on special teams and on, you know, and when Auburn's on offense, we can't give them turnovers and let them score. That's the number one thing, because I think the Auburn defense can hold them down. I think we can stop the run and make Hurts make bad, you know, decisions. I think, you know, on third and long, we stop the run. I think Lawson and Adams and them could get pressure on him and mess him up. But if we give them, you know, throw a couple of picks and they run it back or whatever, then it doesn't matter. So that's the number one thing, is like, we can't give them any extra easy stuff. We got to make them work for every single point.
You know, if you had told me that Hurts's numbers were that bad, and said, what do you have to do to have numbers that bad? I would have said,
smoke weed every day.
Because that's bad. How is he?
Bad, but he's a freshman, and he's on a team surrounded by five-star Americans, and he's a great runner. This is the other part. It's like Nick Marshall, okay? Like when things break down, he runs and gets a first down. And they run a lot. I mean, this is the thing. If you haven't watched Alabama play a lot this year, they are running a lot of Auburn stuff. Well, but they, I mean, this is the thing that drives me crazy. You know, like, I went to the 2011 Iron Bowl in Auburn, and, you know, we got killed, and all the Alabama fans around us are like, oh, take that high school offense, get out of here. I wish I could find all those people now and ask them how they like it, because they're running a lot of the exact same plays that we ran.
Yeah.
So I think.
They just signed a five-star dual threat quarterback, and I was saying Alabama made fun of dual threat quarterbacks right up until they decided they had to have all of them.
That's right. And so you're going to see the same stuff you saw from Nick Marshall and Auburn, the speed sweep stuff, you know, the read option stuff. They do all that, and it works because it's smart and it's effective. And Lane Kiffin's, you know, does a good job mixing it up. So the interesting part to me is, like, will the familiarity of both teams with each other's offense give the defenses an advantage? I think that's an interesting thing to keep an eye on in this game. So the number one thing is, like, don't turn the ball over. The number two thing is, like, we stop the run and force Hurts to throw the ball, but keep him in the pocket to throw it. Don't let him, you know, do that rollout passing thing. But if he's in the pocket and we, you know, we kind of do the surround him thing and then get some pressure on him, I think we'll be in good shape.
When this game is over, John, I hope that Jalen Hurts I'm sure plenty of people use that joke already, but I've used it, yes.
And the other part of this is Auburn has to have a great day tackling. Like, we can't let guys break tackles, and we can't miss tackles. When Hurts is running the ball or Calvin Ridley's running the ball in the sweep or whatever, the first guy has to make the tackle. I mean, Hurts had over 100 yards rushing against Ole Miss, Tennessee, LSU, and Mississippi State. Ouch. So, I mean, he's a good runner, and that's part. I mean, it's very different from some of these other Alabama teams, but that's a big part of their offense, especially when things get tough. Is him running and making first downs is big. So I think stopping him running the ball, making him throw, and then getting pressure on him throwing, I think is a real recipe. And I think Auburn's defense can stop the run.
Yes,
I mean, they really can. It's not going to be, you know, we're not going to hold them to nothing, but they're not going to roll up and down the field on us, you know, offensively. In terms of Auburn's offense, you gotta have balance. I mean, I read you the passing stats a minute ago from what Ole Miss and Arkansas did. You can't beat them being one-dimensional running the ball. I mean, no one is going to do that. You have to be able to throw the ball effectively, and we got the receivers to do that, I think. Like, if Sean plays and he's healthy, then I think we can do that. Auburn's offensive line is really, really good. They're really effective. And I think, especially at running the ball, we're going to have more success than other teams did. I'm not saying yes. like we're going to roll up and down the field, but it's not going to be like when you see Alabama play some of these lesser teams and they're crushing them in the backfield every single play. We're going to get some movement on them, and we're going to be able to move the ball running it a little bit. But you saw when Alabama played LSU, if you have no passing threat at all, then it's very easy for that defense to stop you. So you really you have to pass and pass and pass, and you can't just go in and try and run. I think we will have some success running kind of up the middle, and we run really well to the right side with the left and Braden Smith over there. So I think we're going to have some success doing that. But the other thing we've really gotten better by not giving up negative plays. We got to stop doing, we got to continue that, and that's going to be very tough against them. And we got to make some big plays. I mean, like in the Georgia game, every play was 3 yards or whatever. That's not going to do it. We got to have – I'm not saying it's got to be like the 2014, game where we were at, had whatever, 20 plays over 20 yards. But we need to have some of those. We got to have some of those kind of plays.
I wish we could have spread that game out across a few other games in terms of our offense. It's like the one World Series game where you score 20 runs and then you wish you could have spread them out, I just wanted to point out, talking about the Auburn offense, that I just have this feeling, I just have this vision that we're going to come out like we always do and run up the middle on first. It's like Auburn the last few years. We have this thing where we have to come out on the very first play and say, hey, look, we like to run the ball up the middle. Boom. And then on second and nine or whatever, we start trying to get creative. And it drives me crazy. I wish we would do something creative on the first play of the game. But you know what I mean? We always come out and say,
I think sometimes they – do that just to get everybody's nerves, off and get the game going. And
yeah, I guess. But it's like we have to come out and say, here's our resume. We're a power run team. Now we can do other stuff. And it never results really in much more than like 1 yard right into the pile. But the one thing that really impressed me, I haven't watched a lot of Alabama this year because I have too much self-respect, but the one thing that's really impressed me about Alabama, particularly watching most all of the LSU game, was that LSU, with as good of an offensive line and good running backs as they have, it was just like there was a brick wall in front of their offensive line, and they couldn't couldn't go anywhere.
And this is the thing about, in the past, Auburn's offense has, doing misdirection kind of stuff, and a lot of teams, will use that against them, and there'll be a hole, and we'll run through there. Alabama is so well coached on defense, and because they have 20 analysts who do nothing but sit around and watch film, they're going to be very have scouted us very well. So we're either going to have to, be very creative and could go against all our tendencies, and we're going to have to do that and execute well, because like you're saying, it's right. Like they read the play exactly before you even do it because they know what's coming because they're so well prepared, and then they're physically more talented than a lot of the guys in front of them, so they know us coming and they're in the right position. And that makes it very tough to run on them. So it goes back to what I said, like, you gotta throw the ball.
Well, here's my plan, okay? On the first drive, you come out there, and just assuming Sean is well enough to play. I mean, if he can't throw it any better than he did at the second half of last season or he did against Georgia, don't even dress him out, right? I mean, I don't even want to see him out there because he can't throw it. He just can't.
Well, I don't want him to get even more hurt. I mean, that's
right. But if he can play, if he can go, you come out on that first drive and you do what you can do and you see how it goes. And if it works, great. On the second drive, right? On the second drive, I want to put JF3 out there on the first play, and I want him to throw a deep pass. Because that is totally, totally against tendency, right? If he comes out there at quarterback, they're going to bring everybody up, right? They're going to be like 11 men on the line, basically. And he can just chuck it. What do you think? Am I a genius?
It's worth a shot. I mean, he scares me throwing the ball against them. But you're right in the sense that we have to be creative.
Yeah.
And we have to do things they're not going to expect. We can't, Like, let's say best case scenario for Auburn, Sean's healthy, he's back, Petway's healthy, he's back, Cox is healthy, he's back. I don't think all of those things are going to happen, but let's say they do, okay? We can't line up and run Petway into the line 50 times and beat them. Like, we have to we have to do some different stuff. Sean has to throw the ball. We have to, you know, do some play action stuff off Petway and do some, you know, little, you know, wheel routes and passes to Stove and that kind of stuff to keep them off balance. The other thing I think Auburn has to win special teams. We say this every time we play Alabama. Like, their kicker is not great. We know that. They're not great in a lot of other areas. They're good in kickoff coverage and that kind of stuff. But you know, I think Auburn needs to make some plays of special teams. They have a good punter. But take advantage of that. And the one thing that scares me as an Auburn fan in this game, that I would be most concerned about, is regardless of who's playing quarterback, I do not want to be in third and long against this Alabama team because they have better pass rushers.
Right.
Than
anybody. I've said this before, and I was kind of half joking before, but I'm starting to actually mean it. The one thing I really miss about Chizik being the head coach and Gus just kind of running the offense is that Gus, as crazy as this sounds, Gus is more conservative as a head coach than Gene Chizik. It's true, well, isn't it?
I'm laughing because it's true. Like, go back and watch the 2009 tape.
Oh, yeah.
That is a prototype. Like, you know, again, like, I think the Auburn defense can hold Alabama down. But, like, let's say we're situated. Let's say, like, I don't know how any information, but let's say Sean couldn't play. And we were going to have to play, you know, a Jeremy and JF3 at quarterback. Like, at that point, I'm like, pull out the stops, run every trick play you want to. Do it.
Yeah.
You know, onside kick, fake punt, whatever. Well, again, the defense is going to hold them down, but you gotta have to manufacture some things to score some points.
Well, Gus is Mr. Wacky Wacky on offense, but as a head coach, he's very conservative. As a head coach, he believes, you know, run the ball, play defense, punt, don't take chances, don't do anything. You know, he's almost Pat Dye as a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Dr. Gustav and Mr. Dye. and Chizik is the one that had us out there onside kicking, you know, every other fuck. I look back on the Chizik era now, I feel like we onside kicked every other kickoff. Certainly compared to now. The only thing that Gus ever did was he did go for two a couple of times in 2013 when he first took back over. He went for two like Oregon style, you know, randomly in the beginning. And remember what happened? The very first time it didn't work. We've never done it again.
Ditched it.
Yep. We did it like three games, and the third time it didn't work, and we ditched it. We've never done it again. We haven't we onside kicked for like three seasons, and it always worked. And the first time it didn't work, we haven't done it again. and the one time it didn't work, I still think they robbed us. The referees robbed us. It did work. They just didn't see it right or whatever. I thought it went 10 yards. But anyway. That was, remember, we used to just, I mean, Parkey had, our BOS, he had it down great, and then Parkey was pretty good at it. I don't think they've ever asked Carlson to do it, have they? I don't know.
The onside kick?
Yeah.
Not that I'm aware of.
No, I don't think so. But that's just an example. You're absolutely right. The 2009 Iron Bowl is the prototypical what do you do if the other team clearly outclasses you in terms of players and you just want to throw everything but the kitchen sink at them and knock them back on their heels and just keep coming. And I mean, well, I hate that we lost that game, but dang did Alabama know they were in a fight by the time it was over. And they barely won.
They did barely win. And that's the kind of thing. Like, my thing is, like, now, again, this is not the situation this week because I think the two teams are much closer than those two teams were.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's the kind of thing where if the other team is better than you, you can't be vanilla conservative, you know, and beat them. Like, you got to make stuff happen. You have to take chances. And so I think that's part of it. Like, I think, you know, in this game, you could kind of more see how it goes. If the defense is really shutting them down, you don't have to take as many chances. You could maybe try and get a field goal kicking contest with them. But if, you know, if the situation, like, you know, things are not going well, then take some chances. I'd rather take chances and lose than be buttoned up conservative and you know, not have a chance to win.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. If you're going to lose, lose with all your guns blazing. Heck yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely. Let's see. So you wanted to talk about some scenarios, or did you already kind of roll that in and I missed it?
Well, man, I guess we don't have any knowledge. There's no information about Sean, Petway, right. Chandler Cox. Mm-hmm. You know, there's lots of rumors both ways that we will or won't see those players in this game. So, and I don't have any idea.
Well, the last thing about Chandler Cox I heard was he was like the worst hurt of all of them.
Yeah, so I mean, I think I'm skeptical we'll see him, and that's a big loss because, yeah, you know, Jalen Harris isn't as good as him blocking on the edge. So that's a – I think if Cox can't play, we're going to do what we did in this game, which is go to more like four wide receivers, and we're going to go to – and hopefully we'll do the thing that I want us to do, which is put the freaking receivers further out from the formation.
Further out, yeah.
So they pull the defense away, and those guys can help. Like, remember when we played Florida State, Jalen Ramsey was like the nickelback, and he was basically in the backfield all the time because he was covering the receiver right there, the slot receiver, and he would just come in the backfield to make the tackle. You can't give Alabama – and, you know, this is Pruitt,
yeah,
you know, coaching their defense. You can't give them – that kind of easy thing. We need to pull the if we're going to play the receivers, you got to put them further out and take those guys out of their run defense. But
yep,
that's really it. I mean, in terms of like if Sean White doesn't play and Cox doesn't play, maybe so this is a likely scenario. Like maybe Petway plays and we have Jeremy Johnson and JF3. Who would you start of those two quarterbacks?
Jeremy and JF3 and who?
No, if it was Jeremy or JF3, who would you start?
I'd probably start Jeremy, but I would mix it up. I would mix it up like every other play, but I might mix it up every series, in fact.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's not bad. Keep the defense off balance and don't make it like A to B to A to B, but, you know, just kind of mess with them and keep them off balance. And
try to be unpredictable too, because you don't want to put JF3 out there and have him run the ball three times and punt, because that's just not going anywhere. You got to stuff creative with him. You got to do something to help him. I mean, I like how Gus and Rhett both will say occasionally, you know, we got to do more to help so-and-so. And I agree, because sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. And sometimes it's kind of beyond their control. I mean, you know, Cameron Petway certainly helped Sean White and vice versa. But you had to kind of discover that chemistry organically. You couldn't have just known it going in, you know. So,
I think if it comes down to those two guys, I think you got to ride with Jeremy just because I think, like I said, I think you have to throw the ball to beat this team. Now, maybe John Franklin can do something, you know, that I haven't seen. Maybe he can throw the ball better than we think, and he can run around and make plays, and they can't catch him or whatever.
Can you imagine? I'm going to go ahead and say this now, and I'll be on the record with it just on the 1 in 1,000 chance that it happens. Can you imagine the legend of Jeremy Johnson if he goes out there and even just contributes to beating Alabama? In other words, he doesn't throw for 1,000 yards. He doesn't have huge plays. But the defense holds Alabama to under 20, and Jeremy is just workmanlike. He completes, you know, let's say he goes 14 for 22 for one touchdown and maybe one interception, and he runs for like 32 yards. And, you know, maybe Kerryon has a decent game. Maybe Petway has 50 yards. Maybe Martin has, 50 yards. And we somehow beat them. We kick like 5 field goals, and we beat them like 15-14. Can you imagine the legend of Jeremy Johnson as he rode off into the sunset with that under his belt?
I think if that happens, we should build a freaking statue of him, and I think ESPN should do a documentary.
30 like for 30.
It would be the greatest story ever. That's why, yes. Mike, I hope Sean's healthy, because, gosh, that'd make a huge difference.
Yeah.
But if he's not, and I'm the guy who said playing Jeremy was football malpractice.
You said it. You did, but.
Yeah, this is where we are, because I'm skeptical that JF3 – now, maybe you play JF3 and give him a couple series, and if nothing's happened, then you play Jeremy. So.
Yeah, maybe so.
All right.
Well, one other thing. While we're talking about Alabama, I've got two experts here to consult, and this is we can ask Frank Sinatra and Angie Dickinson what they think about it.
I got great news for you.
Auburn beat Alabama by 12 points.
No, this is important, honestly.
That's from the original Ocean's 11. I just love that.
I love that.
I love it. I love that Auburn had been Auburn for about 2 years when they made that movie, but they were already calling us Auburn. They called us Auburn before that, obviously. I do have, if we can hold on for just a second here and push the button, we do have...
Factoid of the Week.
Factoid of the Week.
Still using the little speaker. I haven't got the soundboard working right at all, so it just sounds a little crackly there. Sorry, but couple of factoids about the Iron Bowl, and then I've got another little thing real quick. One is the last. Do you remember, John? What was the last year that the Iron Bowl in Birmingham was split 50-50? Because our younger fans out there, younger Auburn fans out there, probably don't realize that from when they started the series back up in the, like 48, somewhere in the 40s, I guess 48, when they started it back up after it didn't get played for 40 years, they split Legion Field down the middle, and Auburn had one end and Alabama had one end. And, you know, the tickets were evenly divided every year. One team was the home team and one team was the away team. They alternated, obviously. But they quit that once the deal was made to come to Auburn. And they played more games in Legion Field after that, but they were no longer split 50-50. So do you remember what was the last year that they split it 50-50?
We came to Auburn in 89, and I think we gave away a year or two to get him the deal. Yeah. So I'm going to say like 86, 87.
87, yeah. Auburn's 10-0 shut down, shut out, shut up game in 1987. Win over Alabama was the last 50-50 split. And it was the first Iron Bowl I ever attended in person was the last 50-50. 88 was an Alabama home game in Legion Field. And we won. And then 89, of course, was in Auburn. Now, it still got kind of weird. 90 was a home game for Alabama in Legion Field. But 91 was a home game for Auburn in Legion Field. We actually played in Auburn in 89.
I was going to say, that was part of the deal. We had to give that game away.
Yeah, we had to throw them a bone, as Pat Dye said. We had to give them the 91 game in Birmingham, even though we were the home team. Because after 89, we didn't play at home again against Alabama until 93 with Terry Bowden in the 11-0 year. That was only the second time ever, that 22-14, 15, something.
Mm-hmm.
And, that 91 game, I was at it. Did you go to that? I can't remember. We weren't together, but I can't remember if you went or not. That was the one they actually had a big AU on the artificial turf on Legion Field. Strangest thing I've ever seen in my life. Right on the 50-yard line, a big AU on the 50-yard line of that cheap plastic lawn, you know, turf that they had at Legion Field that used to hurt all the players.
No. Yeah. I didn't go.
You didn't miss anything. It was bad. So that was the only time Auburn was the home team in Legion Field against Alabama and got a full home team ticket split. That was the only time, 1991.
You're not ever really the home team anywhere where the ushers all wear the other team's hats, though.
Right, and there's a statue of Bear Bryant outside the stadium. That's just you're not the home team. I wanted to point out, too, that Pat Dye and Terry Bowden were both undefeated in Iron Bowls played in Jordan-Hare. The first Auburn coach to lose an Iron Bowl in Auburn? Was Tommy Tuberville in 1999. And the other thing I'll get in really quickly, and I'll just do this quickly, but I think this is pretty far out, is I've thought about this over the years, and it's kind of come true again, is I can go back to the 50s. Before that, I get a little shaky on my history of Auburn football and Alabama football and everything. Plus, they didn't play each other before 48. But if you pick up with the 1950s, right after they started playing each other again, this is really bizarre. When, just generally speaking, when there is a Republican president in the White House, Auburn does better against Alabama. And when there's a Democratic president in the White House, Alabama does better against Auburn. And again, it's in general, and there are a few years that are exceptions, but overall, the trend is very strong. Just look at it. In the 1950s was Eisenhower, the Republicans, and Auburn was dominating in the 50s and won the national championship in 57 and just slaughtered Alabama. In the 1960s, you have Lyndon Johnson John F. Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson, the Democrats, and that was when Alabama under Bear Bryant started winning their actual national championships, the ones that are actually true. And then in the 1970s, you have Jimmy Carter in the late 70s, and that's when Alabama won their 78 and 79 national championships. Reagan comes into the White House, Bear Bryant immediately retires and keels over. And Auburn dominates the 80s under Ronald Reagan and into George Bush. In fact, in George Bush's first year, we won the game in Auburn, the first time ever game. Then Bill Clinton comes in 92. Alabama wins a national championship in 92 out of nowhere. And Alabama has a pretty good 90s, going to the SEC championship game a bunch, usually losing to Florida, but a couple of times they won. And then in the 2000s, you had George W. Bush, the Republicans in there, and Auburn beat Alabama 6 in a row. And then Barack Obama in 2008, and that was the year that Saban got Alabama turned around and started winning. So with our current election that happened a couple of weeks ago, if nothing else, and I mean it, if nothing else, that bodes very well for Auburn in the Iron Bowl coming up over the next few years. So for those of you that are happy about how things came out, it's just one more good thing. And for those of you that are not, it's something to look forward to, right? So there you go. But isn't that, that's amazing, isn't it? I mean, that's really
cool. It's pretty good.
Pretty amazing. Yeah, there you go. Okay. I did that about as quick as I could and still get the point across, but because I don't want to spend all night on it. But I just think that's a neat little thing. So I think it must be time for me to push the mirror button.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
What we got?
All right. We got some questions. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
First question comes from Daniel Henry. And he says, I apologize that it's a longer question, but he says, I think Auburn has a chance in this game, to be honest, and I don't think I'm crazy. He said the Auburn defense has been very good this year, and I think they match up very well against Bama's offense. I think we can stop or set on the run and force Hurts to beat them in the air. And if we can get after him, he is actually a true freshman. He says on the offensive side, if Pettway and Cox can go, I think we'll run on Bama to extent. Heck, last year, until we lost a guy to injury, the offensive line was able to do some things against Bama. Special teams, our guys can cover Bama guys, or we just kick the ball where it's not returnable on punts and kickoffs.
And
our two goal kickers.
Don't throw a pick six. Don't throw a freaking pick six. It's what they live on.
That's right. The question is, do you think our return game will be, on punting and kicking? Can we avoid mistakes and get a big return finally?
Oh, we need something.
And can our offense score more than 20 points against them?
You know, isn't it funny? That's been the one thing our defense has not done. They've done everything else spectacular, but this defense just has not produced interceptions really, except for a couple of keys. And they haven't produced pick sixes. They haven't turned over like fumble recoveries much. They've just been solid as a rock in stopping the other team and forcing punts. But they haven't done – they've really been kind of, in my opinion, kind of below average in turning the ball over and creating scoring opportunities going the other way.
It's true. So maybe this is the week.
It's just weird to have a team that be so good at just defense in general and yet so mediocre at the peripherals of that, you know, like getting turnovers and –
I think if you went back and watched every defensive play over the course of the season, there's probably been 10 plays where Auburn had a real chance to do that, where like the ball hit somebody, hit a defensive player in the hands, there's nobody between him and the end zone.
Absolutely.
And we dropped all of them.
Absolutely.
All right. Next question comes from David Smiley, who says, how will you categorize Jeremy Johnson's career? Obviously disappointing, but can you think of a better representative of the Auburn spirit?
Yeah, he's been Cody-like in a way, except that he couldn't go out and play receiver the way that Cody did, and so he just kind of was left out. I felt bad that there was no other position he could really play, you know? And by the time it was decided that he wouldn't play any other position, that he might need to, it was too late.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think he knew what he was getting into this year.
Yeah.
In terms of being in battle and maybe not starting, so.
I think he's been very good to just sit there in his uniform and talk and know he's not going to play. It's kind of been sad, but we'll see what happens Saturday.
War Eagle Pooh says, what is a former Auburn coach talking about on Twitter? And he's referencing the Jack Crow stuff from yesterday.
Geez. He's gone off the deep end, man. Jack Crow Jack Crow.
Secret agent?
No.
On whose side?
I mean, I don't think he's a secret. I think he's an Auburn guy.
Side?
I think he's an Auburn guy and he cheers for Auburn. And, he's like everybody else. He's not happy with how the Georgia game turned out and how everything works. And, I think he's entitled to his opinion like everybody else is.
He actually tweeted that Gus handed over offensive play calling responsibilities to Rhett Lashley for the explicit purpose of throwing Lashley under the bus and getting him fired to save his own job. That is bonkers. That is nuts.
I don't think, and it's nuts, it's reading the worst into Gus's actions, which I think is not who he is. So I just think like, you said this before, like everybody wants their coach to be Saban, you know, in terms of the winning part and sure, the machine-like operation, and that's not who we are. So,
no.
Josh Corbett says, so what are the chances Petway plays, and what are the chances Auburn pulls off the upset?
Well, if Petway plays and plays healthy, the chances go up a great deal, I tell you that much. I just don't know how quick you can come back from an injury like that and be anywhere near 100%. And like you were kind of alluding to earlier, if you got a 70% Petway and you run him into that defensive line, he's not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes a liability. Then you might as well just have Cam Martin out there. In fact, I wouldn't mind a whole lot of screen passes to Cam Martin and carry on.
I think they come down on that kind of stuff pretty quickly. Wynn Carroll says, who goes higher in the draft, Carl Lawson or Montrevious Adams?
Oh!
I'm going to say Lawson.
Yeah.
Just because Adams has been great. Adams has had a great – I would say Adams has had a better college season. I haven't looked at the raw numbers, but I think Adams has made more – a consistent impact. But I think the NFL loves like the physical testing attributes, and I think Lawson's going to be off the chart on that stuff. And he's also like he's a very focused, consistent, guy, serious about football guy. Adams has shown the potential to be kind of up and down. So I think that part about Lawson they'll like.
I think if you look at the career, Lawson probably goes further. But I agree that Adams has had quite a senior year. He's been really good. He's been really good this year. So, yeah, it could just come down to, whichever team decides to take them first and, what they need.
That's true. But, I just think the loss in physical ability and stuff, I think he's going to go first. But you're right. It could go the other way. Yeah. Our next question is Logan Chilton says, I'm in denial that we played the fake Alabama Saturday. Could y'all do an analysis as if we beat Alabama 55-0? I'd feel so much better.
Oh, you know, but that raises a very good point, though, which is I've lamented this forever, which is that we never just drop the freaking hammer on Alabama. Now, obviously in the modern Saban era, that's just not going to happen, right? We understand that. Although I got to tell you this. If you had this year's defense and just 2 years ago offense, and we rang up 44 on them on offense, I don't know that they'd score that much on our defense this year.
Oh, good gosh, no.
Think about
that defense was terrible.
Think about the defense we have right now and just 2 years ago on offense with that 44 points that we laid on them in Tuscaloosa. Man, that's nice to think about. But yeah, I mean, even when Alabama was down, we'd even lose to them occasionally when they were down, like 84.
Mm-hmm.
But we never just absolutely dropped the hammer. The closest we ever came to just shellacking Alabama in the modern era was probably 2005 when, correct me if I'm wrong, that game was like 21-0 in the first quarter,
mm-hmm.
28 maybe before halftime. And I thought, this game is over. We're going to go for 56 on this crowd. And we didn't score another point because Tuberville.
All right. What would this podcast be like if we actually beat Alabama 55-0? It would just be like you and I laughing like maniacs for an hour and a half.
I've been saving.
You hitting random buttons.
Oh, it's the worst one. This is a big one. Hear that, Elizabeth? I'm coming to join you, honey.
I'm telling you, I've been saving stuff up for 3 years now for that. I'm waiting. I'm waiting for that occasion. I will point one little factoid out, though. We beat Alabama in 07. They beat us in 8-9. We beat them in 10. They beat us in 11-12. We beat them in 13. They beat us in 14-15. Do you see where I'm going?
Mm-hmm. I got another factoid at the very end.
It's our turn. This year is our turn on all the recent trends. This year is our turn. They haven't beaten us three in a row since, what, 1990, 91, 92?
Mm-hmm.
That may be the last time they beat us three in a row.
I
think it is.
I think you're right. Dan in North Carolina says, I think Auburn can win this game. How do you see Auburn managing to do it? So what's the vision like of Auburn? I think Auburn wins this game. It's going to be something like the defense plays really well. We hold them to like 13, 17 points, something like that. Yeah. The offense makes a few big plays. We kick some field goals. We drive down the field some. Maybe
lots
take advantage
of field goals.
Stake.
Lots and lots of field
yeah,
goals.
Yeah, so maybe win like 16-14, something like
yes,
that.
Yes, that's it. That's you it. Because I don't know if our offense can cross the 50 on them.
17-14,
no,
something like that.
No, we're not getting 17. That's two touchdowns. 18 or 21 by threes. I'm telling you, it's the Gus Oyich, the mule game. We get to the 50 and he kicks 67-yard field goals all day. That's how we do it. It's
all
not
right.
Entirely inconceivable. Although he did miss a long one against A&M, dang it.
Josh Corbis says, does Jeremy Johnson play any against Alabama? So if Sean White was healthy, would you put Jeremy in the game at all?
Only in a very, very specific situation where he can do something to like keep Sean from getting killed on a quarterback sneak from the 1 yard line or something like that.
I wouldn't do that even. Wow. I'd play Wildcat if that's the issue.
Yeah,
but I mean, again,
you put Kerryon in there for that. That's you're right. That's what Kerryon's job is, among other things, is to
that's
go
right.
in there
but
on it, the one and Wildcat.
But that's if Sean is healthy.
Yes, which is not. I just don't see him even playing, but okay.
No. Patrick Ringer says...
hey, Patrick. I got to get a sound effect for Patrick.
He says, Jeremy looked good Saturday. If he had played all year, what kind of numbers would he have had?
Oh,
he's making fun of me for the Regal Reader column I wrote before the 2015 season about Jeremy's projected number. So,
yeah, I said if he'd played against a 1AA schedule all year, he'd have 8,000 yards.
That's right. That is it for questions.
All righty.
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
There weren't a lot of games to get excited about. The Florida LSU game was obviously the marquee matchup, and all my tweet was LSU getting inside the Florida 8-yard line four times and getting 3 points reaffirms my confidence in my ability to judge Steve Ensminger's offensive abilities.
What if Rhett left and Auburn hired Steve Ensminger?
I'd leave. I'd follow Rhett.
He'd go to wherever school he's at.
I'd go to Bethune-Cookman or wherever he's the head coach. Yep. It's going to be funny when they fire Gus in a couple of years and I go and like change this show to whatever school he's at. It's all going to be fun and games then. Because then you'll quit and I'll be doing a solo show about Arkansas State again or something. Where would Gus, here's a question for you. Here's my question for the wishbone. If Gus got fired after, let's say next year doesn't go well and he gets fired, what school would hire him within the next year?
I think he still has a reputation that he would get hired.
Would it be a directional school or would it be
one of those schools like the AAC, like that American Conference,
Cincinnati,
or the Sun Belt, Arkansas State, those guys. But yeah, I mean, I think South Florida or Memphis, maybe somebody Memphis. Like that.
That's not too far from here. That'd be cool. Okay,
you're playing it ahead. Gosh.
All right.
So Florida beat LSU in the We're Not Scared of You revenge game.
John, I've still got my Texas Tech hoodie from when Tubbs went to Texas Tech, man. Come on.
Ole Miss lost to Vanderbilt and is now the best 6-loss team in the country.
You're right. And get this. Vanderbilt beat Georgia and Ole Miss this year and lost to Kentucky and Missouri. If Vanderbilt had their crap together at all, they'd be challenging for the SEC East this year.
I agree. And they get Tennessee next week. They get a chance to mess Tennessee's season up.
Oh, wow. That would be so awesome. I'm telling you, once in my lifetime, Vandy's going to Atlanta. And the funny thing, they're going to be like Greece winning the Euro 2004. And the one thing that's going to be so funny about it is Vandy's going to go to Atlanta and Ole Miss still won't have been. That's what's going to be funny.
That's so good. Missouri lost to Tennessee and Arkansas beat Mississippi State, but we don't want to.
Man, Arkansas and Mississippi State didn't play any defense. Neither did Missouri and Tennessee. I didn't watch either one of those games because I thought they both sounded like snooze fests. Clearly, they didn't bother to dress out a defense.
Well, I mean, I think the Arkansas was beating the crap out of Mississippi State, and Mississippi State came back.
Okay.
And the same thing in the other game, like Missouri gave up like 700 yards or something. So
I can't wait to go over to Missouri next year. That's going to be so fun because it's got to be a guaranteed win, right? The way things are going, unless they really turn their act
they have
around.
A good young quarterback. Let's not get carried away.
All right. Let's see. I got a lot of crap from Georgia fans that you'll laugh. Scored 21 points on Georgia, and we scored 7 on them. Of course, I'm sure you'll laugh. Quarterback wasn't in agony, and their running back wasn't hurt and all that. So, and Georgia, didn't care and was playing third-string players and stuff. But I see that Western Carolina rang up 31 points on Will Muschamp, which is kind of funny. It's been hilarious to hear all the garbage that's been spewed about Alabama only beating Chattanooga 31-3, like there's something wrong with it.
I think it's probably exactly how Saban won, other than a couple guys leaving the game banged up. So
yeah. What we got coming up? We've got a Thanksgiving fiesta of LSU at Texas A&M. That's usually a fun game, isn't it?
It is, but Texas A&M doesn't really have a quarterback, and LSU's maybe the Ed Orgeron farewell game. So
yeah, they don't have a quarterback either, though. So that's true of a lot of teams right now. Either they don't have a quarterback at all, or their quarterback's hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Friday we've got Arkansas, Missouri. I was saying they need to add Missouri onto that trophy and have it the Battle of the Golden Thigh High Boot.
Arkansas, Missouri, like, do I care? Not really.
No.
Like, if I'm laying on the couch Friday afternoon, I'll turn it on, but.
Surely, Lord help, Arkansas will win that, right?
You gotta think so.
Missouri's dropped off about like we did in 2012.
Well, and we can't let the East get another win. That's my feeling.
So. Kentucky, Louisville. That's always a pure hatred game. I know some people on both sides of that little squabble. Georgia Tech at Georgia. I hope Georgia Tech beats that tail.
And Georgia Tech beat Virginia Tech a week or two ago. Their offense is, you know, it's one of those things. Like, their offense is either great or it's terrible, and the current defensive staff at Georgia hasn't played them. You know, like Rick's guys had played them a bunch, so that'll be interesting.
Right. Is Georgia Tech going to fire their coach?
I don't know. Not if they beat Georgia, but if they get killed in that game. I mean, I don't think so. I mean, people aren't excited, but who are they going to get that's going to excite people there?
Exactly, right. The Egg Bowl, what do you think about that? Both teams really struggling.
They really need a win. Like, it's one of those, like, both those teams are desperate.
I mean, it's two raggedy castaways in the lifeboat that haven't eaten in 3 weeks, and you throw a cheeseburger in the boat and see what happens.
That's it. That's the game exactly.
They call it the Cheeseburger Bowl.
I mean, Ole Miss burned, you know, Patterson's red shirt with the idea they would get to a bowl game and then he could have the whole bowl practices, you know, to get better and stuff. If they don't win this game, they're going to go to a bowl game.
Wow. The Kakalaki Bowl, Carolina and Clemson. I'm sure that Muschamp can put something in the way of Clemson.
I think he'd give him a game.
Yeah, I hope so.
South Carolina's not terrible. I think Clemson has a lot more talent, but I think South Carolina's going to kind of muddy it up for a while.
Can I just go ahead and say, John, I'm ready for Clemson to be done with this. I need Clemson to just go ahead and go back to being a mediocre ACC team. It's been cute. It's been okay. They had their little run. But now I need Clemson to go back to what you're supposed to be, which is a 7-5, 8-4 team with delusions of grandeur. I'm done. I need Clemson to cut this out. This is enough. And not win anything big in the process, right? I don't want to look back and say, oh, those years where Clemson was really good and won those two national championships. No. I mean, I wish they'd beaten Alabama last year just because Alabama. But I'm glad that Clemson, in retrospect, doesn't have a national championship to show for this, because we do. Right. Right now, they're equal to us in 2013. I don't want them equal to us in 2010 and 2013.
Yep.
All right. Tennessee, Vanderbilt. Again, you said Vanderbilt can really mess Tennessee up, and that'd be hilarious.
Go Doors.
Yes. And then Florida State. Florida really needs this because they're in a tough spot. I mean, this is actually an interesting thing. Florida just had this incredibly tough game at LSU. They turn around a few days later and have to go to Tallahassee. And then turn around and go play Alabama on a neutral field. That's tough.
Well, and Florida, because they canceled that other game to get in the LSU game, is 8-2.
They lose. They're missing.
They have 10 games, and so. But if they lose at Florida State, lose to Alabama, they'll go drop them down 8-4. So I think they're, you know, like, they have a much better chance of beating Florida State than they do of beating Alabama. So. Sure. I think this game will have a lot to do with where they go in a bowl. So
it's being funny that they're 8-2 right now. This could harken back to the days when you'd have an SEC championship game team that ends the season with 8 wins. Mm-hmm. It's been a while, I think. I may be wrong about that, but I feel like it's been a while, especially since they went to 12 games from 11. It's been a while since we had a team come out of Atlanta and then out of its bowl game and have 8 wins. It's been a while.
I think you're right.
So that would be interesting. Yeah, when we went in 2000, we had at least nine. Over by the time it was all over, and yeah, so 97 we had a 10-win team. The Southern fighting this week. The Southern fighting this week are playing the UNLV running. So go fighting beat running.
Go fighting.
Fighting beats running. Be sure to pick up. I guess that it's November 21st as we record this, and time is getting short. But we've had a couple more people, I think, that have expressed interest in getting a copy of Lorendo for their loved ones, and so you can certainly go and just order it from Amazon if you want to get it in a few days. If you want to get a signed copy, you need to just pretty much contact John directly, and he'll hook Mr. Ringer up with the address and the name and everything. So. But be sure to pick up a copy of Lorendo, and while you're at it, you might want to check on our other two books from White Rocket Entertainment, which is Decades of Dominance, Auburn Football in the Modern Era, and of course, Season of Our Dreams, the 2010 Auburn Tigers. John, this is our last few moments before they go play the Iron Bowl on Saturday. Do you have any last encouraging or discouraging thoughts for the Auburn Tigers facing Alabama in the Iron Bowl?
I have three things to say.
Yes.
Number one, this is my factoid of the week. This is the 20th Iron Bowl in which both teams have been ranked in the top 20.
Wow.
In those games, Auburn leads 11-8 and has won 9 of the last 11.
Wow. Yeah. There you go.
That's a good stat. And the second thing I want to say is I have faith in the Auburn defense.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. Mm-hmm. And the last thing is, you know, beat Bama.
John, that's it. Alabama wears red. And when I look at that, all I think is,
and that's nothing but pure and simple old-fashioned communism.
And that's right. And remember, whenever we play Alabama, what we always say, if Alabama's playing, we'd even root for all these, all the old, all the old, all the old. So I guess we'll wrap up with that. I'll probably just play the Soviet national anthem as our out. And otherwise, I guess really, beat Bama and War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
All right. Good deal. All right, that's a good show. I feel good about it.
It was fun.
All right, let's go take it easy and get fired up for Saturday. Huh? I feel a little more encouraged about it than I did beforehand, so I think this was useful.
Good, I'm glad.
All right, go to bed.
Go to bed.
Go to bed.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.